Welcome to In the Loop, a New England Temperature Solutions podcast. In today's episode, NETS President Dominic DeLuca will be interviewing Peter Sherwin, the Global Business Development Manager of Heat Treat Solutions at Wattlow, about Wattlow's heat treat solutions. Peter has been working alongside NETS since 2008 with Wattlow, Eurotherm, and Schneider Electric. Without further ado, here's Dom and Peter helping you get in the loop.
Hi, I'm Dominic DeLuca from New England Temperature Solutions, and today I have Peter Sherwin from Wattlow, Wattlow Eurotherm, and he is our heat treat solution manager. Peter, would you introduce yourself?
Yeah, good to connect with you again, Dom. It's been quite a bit of time since we've done one of these. So yes, my name is Peter Sherwin. I'm the Global Business Development Manager for Wattlow. Have been in this role sort of prior to Wattlow a year ago when we were acquired by Wattlow from Schneider Electric at Eurotherm. I've been in this position for the last 6 years and with Eurotherm for 15 years.
Okay. And did you come from a heat treat background?
Yes. So I've actually been stateside. I'm based just outside Denver in Colorado. I've been here for the past 15 years. But prior to that, I ran heat treat facilities in India. And before that, for the majority of my time, I was in the UK, born and brought up in the UK, and ran both captive and commercial heat treat businesses over there.
So you have a lot of experience in running heat treat as well as providing solutions. And how about a family? Can you tell us a little about your family, personal side?
Yes. Yeah. So a wife and a couple of kids. One already flew the nest, so he's been through graduating university and then sort of through his first job and then setting up on his own. He's got his own digital marketing agency. And in fact, my daughter, her birthday is tomorrow and she'll be 12.
Okay. Wow. Okay. But you've managed to get one out of the house and keep most of your hair. Or a good portion.
Yeah, it's some of it's gone, and certainly it's a bit grayer than when we first met.
And you have a teenage girl, so it's all just get. You might as well just do it. I had to shave it off because it's getting there. So,
okay.
So it's funny you say that. I think it was in this office on the other side 12 years ago. I think we did our first video, and you were in it. It was on a NanoDAC. We were introducing a NanoDAC. And
yes.
Were you here when we went to dinner, came back and thought the light caught on fire? Was that the video? Really? The light had fallen?
No, I think that was Troy.
Okay, somebody else.
But right. I did hear about that.
Yes, we almost had a fire on one of our videos. But so we go way back. And so today we're going to talk about heat treat solutions. And could we start with, your Therm Wattlow has the same philosophy as us, as we hang around a temperature control loop. Could you walk us through what's in that loop for Wattlow Eurotherm? The parts that you...
Yes. So from a heat treat perspective, and actually at Wattlow, we can combine it across a number of different pieces of equipment. So we call it CFO, so chambers, furnaces, and ovens. And in each of those chambers, you have a sensor that's sensing the temperature that is then connected back to some kind of temperature controller, usually a PID device, which then connects with some kind of power controller, and that then connects back to the heater, and the heater is turned on and off depending on whether you're at temperature or not. So you've got all of those different components, and usually along with that, to meet certain regulations, you have some kind of data management solution in there.
So Wattlow has the thermocouples.
Yep.
Right? And then Eurotherm and Wattlow have the controller. And
we do.
Eurotherm and Wattlow has the SCRs. And then the data management is in the heat treat. Is it as much Wattlow in a heat treat or is it more Eurotherm?
So having come together over the past, we've got some overlapping devices and some differences there. So we're going through the portfolio and sort of harmonizing certain products And we've got quite an extensive roadmap going out, developing new products. Mm-hmm. So you'll see some really good stuff coming out next year and beyond.
Okay. Yeah, we'd heard some news about one of the Wattler recorders sharing the same database as the Eurotherm, which will really help from a sales point of view. So that's great.
Yeah, that's in development at the moment. It's been proved that we can do that. So hoping for something to come out early next year on that.
Yeah, that'll help because there's some advantages to both controllers that are unique, and it would be nice to use whatever the strongest one is on that on the application.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll probably get into this, Dom, about operators and workforce and productivity, but certainly having a coordinating controller that's a touchscreen is something that we've wanted for a long time on the Nanodac, and now with the F4T from Wattler, right. We have that possibility.
Right. Yeah, the F4T is a very nice the product. So I've seen and heard you talk about this thing called ATS, and could you give us an overview of what that is?
Yeah, so probably like yourself, about a year ago, didn't know anything about ATS. This is a product that's being developed within Wattler, mainly for the semiconductor arena. And ATS stands for Adaptive Thermal System. And it's looking at, like we mentioned, all those different components that we've got within a furnace and a control panel. You've got the heater, you've got the sensor, temperature controller, and a power switch. Well, I think the simplest way to describe this is you take advantage of the heater being also a sensor. So you can kind of combine those two operations in one. And rather than have a separate PID controller and power controller, you've got a single energy controller. So it really reduces the number of parts down, simplifies the setup. And ultimately, and this is what's been borne out with the semiconductor activity, is you strive for better temperature uniformity.
Okay. And is it pretty much used in conjunction with a Wattler heater, or can it be a generic, another type of heater?
Yeah, so it depends on the type of heater at the moment, because really how you're picking up the temperature side of things is based on the resistance of the heater. So if you've got resistance changing over temperature, then you can pick up those differences. So it doesn't have to be just suited to all the Wattler heaters that we provide, but it can be used in different type of applications. So I see this going on to graphite elements, silicon carbide, etc.
And so the resistance, I didn't realize that. So are you picking the resistance up through the power controller and feeding it back into the temperature controller, or how are you doing?
Well, so the power controller and the temperature controller is a combined controller all in one. That information is coming back into that unit.
Got it.
And then being analyzed.
Okay, very good. And the other thing I bump into a lot in heat treat, and I know last year there was a mandate that said you had to go digital from a recorder point of view, and I know some. You know, a lot of our customers thought they were joking and then were scrambling at the end because they weren't, apparently. But, you know, the compliance issues and all that are more than in a lot of other industries, probably because of aerospace and NADCAP. Could you talk about the compliance issues around? Because that's really what makes this market a little different, is there's a ton of compliance stuff.
Yeah. So from the aerospace side, you have AMS 2750G, which is the pyrometry standard. And that's, I think, what you're referring to, that's actually dictated now that all control, all recording and over temperature instruments need to be digital. There was another thing that came in about having a decimal place within recording instruments that kind of set everyone kind of scrambling. But that's on the aerospace side, but you've also had very similar requirements come from the automotive industry. Mm-hmm. And so automotive with CQI9 has also required that digital instrument and digital recording. So these are changes that have come quite quickly to the industry. But actually, when they polled the industry as a whole, most companies, I think, across the world, it was something like 65% of companies already had some kind of digital data recorded on their site. So it wasn't something completely new.
No, but how about secure? Because one of the big things we talk about is secure encrypted data for like aerospace and that. A lot of those recorders weren't secure, were they?
So, as all of these standards have evolved, and they're actually evolving much, much quicker now. So we're on MS-2750G. That was part of a usual 5-year update. But actually now going forward, these updates are going to be made every 2 years. What you'll see in the updates as far as data is concerned, there's usually something that's added on. So we've had the fact that we need to have digital data, but certainly the standards stress the security of that data. Mm-hmm. I mean, what they want to protect someone actually going in and modifying that source data and giving inaccurate information. Mm-hmm. So you need to capture that data at source in a tamper evident or a tamper resistant file format. But then even as you pass that along the chain, so when that data is in flight, you want to protect it. When you're reviewing it, you want to protect it as well. So we've done, Dom, quite a bit over the past few years with our data reviewer platform in having the ability to unpack that information in a secure manner on a data reviewer so you can see the trends, etc. But we've gone from not just being able to look at that as a linear chart or a circular chart, but having the spreadsheet view within that software so you don't have to export it to Excel. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you do, then you break that chain of security.
Right. Yeah, when I first started selling digital, probably we had the 6000 prior to the NanoDAC, but I remember going into some of these places and then we're never going to have digital. It's got to be paper. And I'd laugh because I'd go into like a heat treat place and there'd be one of these roll charts, which was our competition had the roll chart. And this thing would be like all the way down the hallway, you know, trying to find that point, and it'd be footprints all over it. And I was telling that to somebody recently, and they told me a funny story where one of their customers wanted a printout of that roll chart. And this was probably the most ingenious thing I'd ever heard. This is the guy, this was years ago, and he figured out a way. He put that roll chart in his fax machine and just let the fax machine fax that whole roll chart to the customer. It was like 100-something pages. Because he didn't have to cut and paste. And it was pretty brilliant of the guy, but it really ticked off the guy who wanted it because his fax machine was just running all day long. But seeing those footprints and the problem of getting that data off of a piece of paper compared to today where you can just write the batch, you can type in. And can you talk a little bit about how our software, you know, automates some of that, lets you create batches in that?
Yeah, so if you take some of the products like the NanoDAC or the 6000 series, you can actually set up batch fields. So when you start a batch, you can put some information about what is the run number, what are the components you're treating, maybe if you're a service provider, yeah, the actual commercial heat treaters name, etc. You can put that detail in so it captures that detail along with the process record. So when you actually look at that information in Data Reviewer, you just have to search for, say, that part number or that company name, and it will quickly bring up the relevant batch mm-hmm. details.
So my understanding is that we were creating a database, but you're able to parse it out by batch, by a lot of different things.
Yes, indeed. And it's very fast to bring that out. I'm going to pick up on your story about faxing. So I'm going to take that to, so this must have been in the 2000s. We had a pretty small photocopier that could scan to PDF. Mm-hmm. And so we used to take those paper chart records and scan it on the photocopier to PDF and then send it. But you can imagine sort of the time involved in doing all of that. Not a good use of someone's time.
No.
And now you can do all of that automatically. So
Right. And finding it. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, you've got this roll of 100. I don't know how I don't, I've never used one. I sell the rolls are pretty big, and to try to find a time on that roll and then get it back. We had the fan folds. Barbara Coleman at the time competed with the Honeywells, and we had the fan fold, which is pretty good. You could just open it up and find your spot. And we used to joke about the footprints and all everybody else's paper, but so it's a different world, you know. And then a decimal point, obviously, no decimal point on a piece of paper, and even a decimal point at 2,000 degrees a little hard anyway, but I guess it's more repeatability.
Well, I have a story about that in India when they had a small frame paper chart recorder that was on the side of a furnace, and we swapped that out with a digital recorder. So, yeah, it was a Eurotherm 6000. Mm-hmm. And straight away, complaints came back that the furnace right. isn't running properly.
Right.
Because that line, the thickness of the line on the paper chart recorder was covering about 5 degrees.
Right.
And so you could actually see that wave on the digital chart recorder, and everyone thought, the chart recorder is having an impact on the right. process control.
Right.
But in actual fact, it was just showing what was in reality happening to that furnace.
Did you ever have to, we've had people complain because they put the decimal point 2000.0 and that last digit would bounce all over the place and they'd complain. So we literally had them put black tape over that number so nobody could see it, because it didn't really, at 2,000 degrees, what's a half a degree? I mean, it's like crazy, but not to insult anybody in that industry, it is a problem. We get that all the time. It's, or the controller is not agreeing with the over temp because it's off by a half a degree or things like that. So
the best thing for people to do is make sure they take advantage of communications now.
Right.
Even in small sort of 16-DIN controllers, you've got the ability to have an Ethernet port and push data out digitally. So you're not having to retransmit and have the errors with those. You could actually just take the exact reading from one device to another. And even with some high limits, those are being combined into sort of temperature controllers and high limits all in one. And mm-hmm. so you have the same reading.
Yeah, we our demo box actually is all Ethernet, and we're communicating via the master communications, like to the SCR. We don't send the 420, right? We send the soft command. Have you done that? You've obviously done that.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a difference of opinion out there. Some people like the 4-20 sort of wired solution, but you have far more data if you do it through the Ethernet. Right. Side of things. So
right. We bring in voltage.
It would be my preference if I was running a piece of equipment today.
Yeah, so we bring in voltage, we bring in current, we bring all that good stuff in from the SCR into the recorder as different channels. We can alarm on, there's certain heaters that lose their resistance over time or their resistance changes. We can alarm on that capability. So the digital communications really allows a lot of PPM, if you would, of something that's going on.
And I think an extension on that is just the rising view of energy and energy management in sort of high temperature applications and the heat treat industry. So I think as we go further and further into the future, there's going to be more requirement, not just to capture data on the process itself, but also capture data around energy.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit more about that, or what that even looks like, or how you could capture that? What?
Yeah, so you can either use sort of independent energy meters. When we were part of Schneider Electric, we had quite a share of a different type of meters that we can use. But you and I know sort of in modern day SCR solutions, they have their own inbuilt energy metering solutions. Mm-hmm. So you can pull that information into your database, into your historian, and actually track that data and energy use over time for kind of a couple of reasons. One is to sort of look at if you're suddenly starting to use more energy, then you know that there's something happening with the furnace. As furnaces operate, they start to degrade over time, insulation sort of starts failing, and you'll get more energy being required to run the process. So that's still one side of it on the maintenance side, and kind of getting to some predictive maintenance, which we're sort of testing at the moment with some I4O technology. But on the other side, it's for compliance with sort of laws and legal requirements going into the future. So you've got the SEC that's putting out requirements on large companies to actually monitor their energy use. They call out these different scopes, whether it's energy that they purchase or they're producing emissions from their gas-fired equipment on site or through the value chain. So if someone's supplying them as a commercial heat treater, then actually capturing the energy use and energy programs that that third party is pursuing. Okay.
Cool. So you touched on it a second ago. You know, we hear this Industry 4.0, and I know you talked about it in the past. How does that help? You know, well, what is it? And then how does it help the process engineer that we might be talking to? And how can, you know, what is our involvement in that? Or will it be in the future?
Yeah. So there's quite a bit to unpack here. I mean, I kind of reflected before we came on the call as to my involvement with this side of the technology. So I have to kind of roll back to about 2010. There was an ops manage event in Florida, a Eurotherm with Invensys together. We were rolling out some of these solutions. So IoT has been around for a while. At that time, you know, we talked that when the Nanodac came out, but maybe you wouldn't know, at that time we'd actually developed an app because the iPhone was relatively new, it had come out, and we had this really smart app developer back in the UK. He developed a flat for the Nanodac, but it was felt that keeping up with all of the updates of Apple, that we really didn't want to go that route in the end. So we had this really fantastic looking app, but it stayed as an R&D project, and instead we put on a sort of a default web server instead. But at that ops manage event, we kind of sort of got exposed to all of the other solutions, particularly with Invensys being focused on oil and gas. They were doing a lot of virtual reality solutions. I remember putting on some goggles and sort of lighting a furnace that was being used in the oil and gas industry and doing this through VR. So this stuff has been around, but back then it's the lights of the oil and gas industry where sort of the hourly revenue is like $10,000 an hour. They could pay for a lot of these smart solutions. And the thing that I've noticed over the past decade is all of these IoT and Industry 4.0 solutions have enabled other people to be part of this now. So the technology is now available to all at a reasonable cost.
Okay. And how do we play in that? I mean, what would Eurotherm offer? You know, what does that look like? And you know, that we'd be, what would we go and tell a process engineer we have in our bag of tricks to help him with that?
Yeah. So I mean, we'd had a few things that we were working on, Eurotherm and Schneider Electric, before we came into Wattlow. And then we sort of continued that because of the efforts that Wattlow had, particularly in their other business units. So there's Energy and Environmental is one business unit that was leveraging sort of gateways to pull data out from processes. And the same thing was being done in Semiconductor. And there was a team back in Wattlow that was actually analyzing this information and providing reports back to the customer to actually give information on sort of, is your process trending correctly? What's your energy use over time? Are we seeing any particular issues with maintenance equipment? So all of that information is coming back to a central place, being analyzed, and then reports sent back to the customer, along with discussions with the customer to kind of understand and put some context around some of that data. So we leveraged that, and we've been running a few pilots across North America over the past few months to sort of really understand where we can add more value with these types of offerings. A lot of the low-hanging fruit is kind of predictive maintenance, really being prepared. So you're starting to see something degrade, kind of understand what its remaining useful life is. So you kind of put a warning up to say, look, if you want to be ready to take this furnace offline in a planned way, then you need to start to be able to get your parts sort of at your site sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. So you're prepared. And the other thing I mentioned with energy, so just picking up on that energy usage and how that will start to deteriorate over time gives you two kind of indicators. One gives an indicator towards maintenance of the equipment, but the other is you want to bounce back to that sort of performance level that you were running at prior to something happening in the furnace. Otherwise, you're just it's just costing you money.
All right. So last question I have for you is more like an elevator speech. You know, why should a heat treater let us in to help him?
Yeah, I think with partners like yourself, Dom, and sort of what we've now got with Wattlow and Eurotherm combined, we've got the most comprehensive solution out there to sort of a heat treat, oven, furnace, a chamber, where we can tackle not only sort of the heating element, but the sensor, as well as the whole control stack. And we have, I think, the most advanced data management platform that is around that's tailored to the heat treat market.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Very good. Well, it's been a pleasure doing this again with you. Oh, let's not wait 12 more years or whatever it was. And enjoy it. You said, what's the weather like in Denver today?
We had a little bit of snow over the past couple of days, but the sun's out and so blue sky. So it's pretty nice here.
Nice. I was out there for a conference in May, and my wife and I did a loop, a 1,000-mile loop all the way around. We started at Glenwood Springs and then worked our way. We ran into a closure because of snow, and you know it was like a 5-hour detour. It's kind of crazy out in that part of the country how they could just say, nope, sorry, road's closed, and you got to go around.
Yep.
But probably one of the nicest places we've been to. We want to go back. It's a gorgeous state, and a lot to do
it's,
there.
It's beautiful. So,
well, thank you very much. You know, we'll maybe do this again on another topic. And it's been great having you, Peter.
Okay, I appreciate the time and opportunity. Thanks, Dom.
Yeah. Bye bye.
Thank you for getting in the loop with us. We hope this podcast was informative, and if you need any assistance on anything in the thermal process industry, please feel free to reach out to us at 800-848-NETS. That's 800-848-6387. Or visit our website at www.nets-inc.com to fill out a request for information form. If there are any topics regarding thermal processes that you would like to hear on a future podcast, please send us a comment. We hope you have an awesome day every day.